You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey guys, Sklar Brothers here with Dan Van Kirk.
Yes.
From Dumb People Town, and we've got Adam from Adam Ruins Everything. Adam Conover on the show this
Hello.
Week.
Hello!
Good time in Dumb People Town, right? I mean, you like to make people smarter. When they finish watching your show
That's what
and
I try to
listen
do.
To your podcast, they try and be smarter. We are going to not be focusing on those people in this episode.
No, but we are going to focus on possibly the greatest eyewitness to any one of our stories. Mulver.
The first story Mulver. Has one of the greatest Dumb People Town characters ever, and he didn't actually do anything wrong. Check it out.
Today's episode is brought to you by Last Rampage, the new true crime film starring Robert Patrick, Heather Graham, and Bruce Davison. And we had the pleasure of speaking to someone involved with the movie.
Hi, my name is Heather Graham, and I'm playing Dorothy Tyson in the movie The Last Rampage. The Last Rampage is a true story about Gary Tyson and how his sons broke him out of prison, and it's a very dark story, and Gary Tyson is not a good guy. I play his wife, and I'm super loyal and devoted to him, even though he's pretty much the worst person in the world. One thing I think is interesting about the movie is a lot of these movies, they tell a story about like, oh, this rebellious guy who was this cool gunslinger and, you know, he did it all these wrong things, but he did it for the right reason. And I think this story sort of turns that story on its head because it's got, at first you think he's a cool guy, but then you're like, no, this guy is just like a selfish, self-centered, narcissistic jerk. I like stories about real people. I think sometimes real life is stranger than fiction. Like, I mean, some of the stuff that happens, you just go, I can't believe this is real, but it's real. And then if you do more research, it's even stranger than the stuff they put in the script. It's just like, sometimes real life is stranger than fiction.
Don't miss Last Rampage, the true story of the prison break of Gary Tyson. In theaters September 22nd and available for on-demand pre-order August 22nd. Find out more on Twitter by following @LastRampageFilm or on Facebook.com/LastRampageFilm.
Feral Audio.
Hey, welcome to the X-Files Files. It's been a while. Sorry. Emily's here making...
Don't look at me, baby.
Faces at me. We've all had, hopefully, a wonderful long Christmas, holiday, New Year break. And we're all back, excited to be watching more X-Files. Hope you guys watched. You know what I was going to do? I was going to do The Ghost Who Stole Christmas as a special Christmas episode. And then I just watched it. And didn't record an episode. I just decided to just kind of watch it and enjoy it and not, you know, put anything out about it. So it'll come out later. Hey, no. We watched it together.
We did. I wanted to watch some Christmas episodes of television shows. I'm just saying, how dare you watch something for joy alone.
For joy alone. This episode, the guest is Matt Gourley, who is awesome. Really, really, really funny guy. He's from Super Ego. He's, you know, involved with that new Wolf Pop podcast network that Paul Scheer started. He is an awesome, really, really funny guy. He's in the Harmontown family, if anyone knows that podcast that I do every now and then. So had him on. And he's a guy who's not super crazy hardcore fan. So it was interesting. He was obviously aware of the show. He's seen the show. So we picked two standalone episodes. Obviously, it would have been super mean of me to just pick two episodes that, you know, fit into the mythologies. We talk about Revelations, we talk about War of the Coprophages, and you'll hear my thoughts on the episode, so I'm just going to let that go. Follow me at X-Files Files. Why are you laughing?
Go ahead.
I haven't had a podcast in a while.
You're doing a great job.
Follow me at X-Files Files. You guys don't realize how crazy it feels to just record a thing.
Sitting in your living room.
To nobody.
To nobody. I mean, you can talk to me.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, but you're doing your own thing.
X-Files.
I just mean recording the intro is really hard because you're not talking to anybody. All the other podcast stuff, you're talking to someone here. It's just like, hey, people. Anyway, what was I talking about?
Come on, tell me where I can find you online.
You can find me at X-Files Files. Find me at Kumail, N-K-U-M-A-I-L-N. Well, the new season of Portlandia starts very soon. Mm-hmm. I'm in one episode of that. And if you haven't seen that show, watch it. All four seasons are on Netflix. And I am in all four seasons. You can watch The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail, which is my stand-up comedy show that I do for Comedy Central that my wife, Emily Gordon, produces.
She sounds great.
She's cool. That I do for Comedy Central. You can watch that on Amazon. What else can I plug? Oh, Silicon Valley is on iTunes and on Amazon, so watch that. We're shooting season 2 right now, and it's going pretty awesome. I actually start back up tomorrow. I have to be at work tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., so...
Cool.
It's the first day of school feeling. Yes, Emily.
Are you gonna open an X-Files as to why Cameron Diaz and Benji Madden got married?
It's okay. Love, you know. Love
takes all forms.
Love is love.
Love is love.
I mean, people look at us and think the same thing.
Oh.
That's a compliment to you.
Oh, no, that's not the case.
Okay.
You have less tattoos and you're way cooler.
Okay, great. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Go to Reddit. The subreddit is at X-Files Files. And you know all this stuff. Do it.
Hey, dude.
Hey, dude.
That's
hey, bro.
Matt Gourley is here.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming, dude.
That was the least likely intro to an X-Files podcast.
Hey, dude. I'm sorry. I felt real lame. It's earlier than it is usually when I'm recording these.
And it's a Sunday morning. I mean, we should be in church.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great segue into the first episode.
I know, huh?
So your history, we talked about this. You hadn't seen it in a while, but you were a fan of the show back in the day.
I liked it, but I in no way am an expert, and I had seen episodes, but I started to watch a little bit more when The Lone Gunman came into the picture.
Okay, so sort of later, yeah.
And they had that spinoff, right?
They had the spinoff,
yes. Ill-fated spinoff or something?
Yes, it's real ill-fated. In the first episode of the spinoff, episode 1 is about someone flying a plane into the World Trade Center.
That's right, okay. Which is my God, that's crazy. I remember that now.
And it was a year before... that happened.
And I'm surprised at how much my memory fails me in terms of what I had seen, and I have not watched X-Files since, but I do remember I was on vacation with my girlfriend at the time in Vancouver, and we always had this thing that no matter where we went, we'd like to go see a movie on vacation, and we saw the X-Files movie.
Did it make sense to you? Or at the time, were you sort of...
I knew enough to understand everything that was going on, but just barely. And I even think... I remember that being a condition in the reviews a lot of saying, you should know this, you should know this. Yeah. So I felt like I was primed going into
it. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, these are two sort of... So I sort of picked two, because we hung out at Dan Harmon's wedding, and I was like, all right, well, I'll just pick two sort of random one-offs.
I'm glad you did, yeah.
But they turned out to be sort of interesting because Revelations, I think Mulder is the believer and Scully is the skeptic.
Yeah,
and Revelations,
I got a little confused.
It flips that.
Yeah.
It flips that. And then the next one, they're sort of separated, and it really is sort of, it comments on their relationship more than most other episodes do.
Yeah, these back-to-back really show how zealous they can each get.
Right.
And it started to make me think, I always remember him being that way, but is she like this in other ways? But this was just a one-off kind of
thing? This was... Well, they sort of have started bringing... Because her thing that they sort of decided... Because Mulder's character is pretty clear, right?
Yeah.
He's like a guy whose his sister was abducted. He's obsessed with this quest. With her, I think at some point they realized a person just saying, no, that's not it, isn't interesting. So then they started bringing her religiousness into it.
Interesting.
And there were seeds of that right in the beginning. She's always wearing a cross. So
this one sort of tackles the issue of her faith kind of head on, and Mulder's the skeptic and she's the believer. And then her character's sort of tension becomes, you know, because she's a scientist, so she needs proof versus religion that sort of requires blind faith to an extent. So how do you reconcile those two things? So this one's sort of about that. And it really, the religions, it's much harder, I realized watching this. It's easy to make a show where someone believes in crazy aliens and make fun of them or comment on it than it is to have someone who's very religious. Because it's tricky to then either support them or discredit them.
I felt like the writers themselves were struggling because the last line of the episode is, it's Scully saying mostly that no one is listening. And I felt like that was the writer saying, hey, like, don't take us as religious zealots.
Yeah.
We still have a level head about this. We just want to explore it.
And yeah.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Where she's like, if he's out, he's saying stuff, but nobody's listening, which is kind of scary. My first reaction watching this episode was, because I grew up very religious and it's in church, and the first thing I think of when I think of religion is boredom. Just like going to these. For me, it was, because I've been going since I was like 2 or 3,
yeah,
up until, you know, my teen years, just sitting there and being so bored. Just as a kid, like, I've heard all these stories. I know all of this stuff. They were fine stories, you know? And then some of them they would make like super violent. And even then I was like, yeah, that doesn't really do anything.
What religion did you grow up
Muslim.
In?
Muslim. Okay. I was Shiite Muslim. I was raised very religious Shiite Muslim. And so a big part of our, well, this is getting into religion too much, but I'll say it real quick. So Shias and Sunnis are the two main sects, the two biggest ones. Uh-huh. And the split happens right after the prophet dies because the head of state and the religious head were the same. And so there's a fight over who it should be. We believed it should have been the prophet's nephew. They believe it should have been his son-in-law.
Right. I remember so this from my Islamic studies class.
Did you really
college.
Do that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but our sort of, the way Shiites, our big defining thing was there was a big war where we got our asses kicked. Like, we were slaughtered. It was horrible. It lasted 40 days, this war, right? So every year during that war, we go to these sermons, and every day someone tells a story of who died that day, right?
Oh, so, my God. That's kind of beautiful, though, in a way.
It is. As a kid, for me, I never really appreciated it. Like, and I felt guilty for not appreciating it. But I just felt like, why are we talking about people who lost? And not that I wanted to defect, but
you're a sports fan.
Yeah, I'm like, man, come on. Yeah, we're sort of like the Cubs, I guess. We just had a losing streak, and there was a goat involved at some point, and we fucked up. So when I was watching this, I that's what it flashed back to me was, it's interesting how Christianity and Islam, there's sort of like bloody stuff, like really violent stuff happening to people becomes a big part of the story.
Yeah, when this episode first started, I got really into it because I have somewhat of a history with religion in that my family, we were not raised religious. And then when I was 7, my parents divorced and my mom married a religious man. And then suddenly evangelical Christianity was present in our household.
Oh, wow.
But it didn't take with me. I think there was like a year in college where I kind of dabbled on it in the way that you'd go to lesbianism or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, and, but I feel like I got vaccinated with just enough Christianity at an early age that it didn't take.
Right.
But I have been left with like almost an obsession with it and how my family, because now my entire family, except for my dad and my stepmom, for the most part, are religious and no one was. And it came out of nowhere. And so I just can't get enough of this type of thing, like sensationalist religion and stigmata and all
this
that
one
stuff.
Really is sensationalist religion. We have a lot of like posturing and stuff too in our religion. Like we do the thing where we have self-flagellation. Shias do. We do that with like chains and knives and swords and stuff. Like it's intense stuff. Yeah. And I used to go to these every year, twice a year. They would have these processions where they block off streets and streets. And then these people go and it's, I don't know how relevant this is. I guess it's sort of relevant because it's the faith stuff.
And it's definitely interesting.
We have So what most people use, dudes do this, women walk on coals, wear those. That's us. The walking on coals thing.
Yeah,
we use,
okay, yeah, yeah.
That's us. Yeah. we did that. that's one of our hits, really.
That was you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
I'm a
you
fan.
Know, I mean, we just one day we're like, oh, coals, that's it. But what we, our thing is, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, I'm just saying this is what, and it still happens, you take a, it's a weapon, I guess you call it, and it's a wooden handle with 5 chains and a blade at the end of each one, and you hit yourself in the back with it, and when you hit about 13, 14, you're supposed to do it, but you see kids 6 doing it.
No.
So there's also some people who take swords, hit themselves on the head a few times, and then fall down. So I'd go to these. I never did it, but well, I have...
you've seen people do it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
All the time. I would see, like, little kids walking by with, like, bloody shirts, and you're stepping over puddles of blood. Like, there's just blood everywhere. This is like a street, like Karachi. People don't have the image in your head. Karachi looks like New York.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, very, very urban and very, it's a cramped city. And it smells like blood. Like, I remember this. It took me years to be, I was like, whenever I go to the procession, it really stinks. And it was like, I was in my teens when I was like, oh, that's the smell of blood. So that sort of stuff is, I mean, it's a big part of me. And so whenever people talk about faith, like there's one part in this, in the episode that really struck me, where there's the guy, Michael Berryman, who's the guy who they say, they're like, he looks like the devil. And then the cuts to that guy.
Yeah.
The guy who's, he's in like.
The Hills Have Eyes guy.
Hills Have Eyes guy.
Yeah.
Where he's sort of tied down and they're interrogating him in the attic. And he goes to Scully. He's like, I do whatever the Lord asks me to do. And he sort of indicts her for not doing that.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, in the show, he's supposed to be right. But that's a very dangerous thing to say.
Yeah.
Like, whatever he asks me, I do without questioning it. Like, that doesn't... And that's exactly what you were saying, is like the writers didn't quite know what stance to take or how to handle this.
Yeah, and that made it almost all the more fascinating to me. I didn't know where it was heading exactly. And that guy, Hills Have Eyes guy, I love. And I also loved when the sketch artist is drawing him, that he not only just draws a bald guy, but it's a perfect portrait of that guy.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. And what does Mulder say? Something about, like, it looks like Homer Simpson's evil twin or something. Like, that's not nice. That looks just like the actor. I thought, like, so it must be hard to be that. First of all, it's kind of cool that he gets to sort of play a different kind of part than he does.
And a hero in some weird way.
I think he is supposed to be a hero. I mean, you know, when he dies, he smells like flowers. He's Saint
Owen. That's right. He's an angel, basically.
Yeah, he's sort of an angel or something. Yeah. And I always feel weird for that guy because he's always cast in that. And there's the part where he's dead and he's laying on the thing and Mulder and Scully are talking. And Mulder's like, you know, he was really abnormal in real life. And maybe he's abnormal in death, too. And I was like, he's right there.
I know. It's like when you'd see casting breakdowns for Ugly Best Friend. You know, and that is difficult. And this guy has made a career on being odd looking.
Yes.
That can't be easy.
No, he's like a walking special effect.
Yeah.
But he's really good in this episode. He's got like soulful eyes.
He does. He's very sympathetic eyes.
Yeah.
I also love that the guy sketching it in this world, in my reality, I'm thinking as the kid's explaining him what this guy looks like, he's probably thinking, I wonder if he looks like the guys in Hills Have Eyes. Like that guy exists in this reality. And he's just drawing that guy.
That's what the kid's saying. Like, it's like, just draw the Hills Have Eyes guy. Here, pull it up on IMDb. Oh, we don't have that yet. But yeah, because when they see the picture, they're like, oh, that's not a real person. That's a kid's crazy imagination. No, that's a human being, and he's in his trailer right now. He's in this episode. I thought that thing of... I always think about, so the first guy, Arlie Ermey.
Yes.
Who's always like the drill sergeant or whatever.
Yeah, it's nice to see him play preacher for once, you know?
Yeah, and it works.
Really well.
It works.
Too well.
He's like the fake preacher guy. He's like a scam artist guy.
Yeah.
And I always like, I'm sort of obsessed with those guys.
Me too.
Because it's, what do you think of them?
They're the worst of the worst. I truly, I don't even know what to say about them. my buddies and I often, whenever we're hanging out, the way we end the night is we turn on religious television and just wonder at it. We watch Faith Healers, and I can't get enough of it. And I don't know how it can happen, but of course I know how it happens. I know people need a reason to believe, but they're willing to overlook anything, and it blows my mind.
Yeah, and weirdly, that's what this episode kind of indicts Scully for that.
Yeah.
They're like, because his speech in the beginning, Arlie Ermey's speech, is like, he talks about faith and science, and he's like, people are always looking for, they need proof for what they see.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, that's how Scully is on the show. But then this episode's a little like, hey, have
it
a little
faith. It
feels
like a departure from her in a forced way. What was the title of the movie? I Want to Believe? Or what wasn't that one?
Fight
of the
Future.
But wasn't there a second movie?
I Want to Believe was a second movie.
Yeah. That's what I found myself thinking of.
Well, that is interesting because Mulder's saying, and he does have blind faith in like UFOs and stuff.
Yeah.
But he's very dismissive in this episode of Scully. Because in the other episodes, you know, Scully's always sort of arguing with him because Mulder has a crazy theory about some liver-eating guy. She's always, like, talking to him and sort of taking it like, okay, I hear that. And he's just very dismissive this whole episode.
And that's where I feel like the writers are going, like, we can play with the alien stuff, but we have to have our voice come through Mulder and soundly put it down.
Right. Yeah. I think so. I think so. Because he believes so much, he just sees the blood and he just tastes it. Like, what if that was real blood?
I know.
That's very unprofessional. It's even unprofessional. That's evidence. You can't lick the evidence,
Not
Mulder.
To mention incredibly unhealthy.
Yeah. It's just sugar. It's gross. Yeah, if you're at a crime scene and you see one of the FBI inspectors just like putting it in his mouth, you'd be like, listen, come on, man.
And also, if he knows it's fake, it could still be cow's blood or something, you know?
Yeah, it could still be cow's blood. And bottom line, it's evidence.
Yeah, like, I know, that's important.
You can't, I always thought that when you see like 80s movies and the cop just like stabs the bag and like takes it.
Yeah.
Like, that's cocaine. How do you know it's cocaine? And now you've just done cocaine on duty.
And what if it's really bad and laced with acid? And that's all you need for an acid trip is one little...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Here's something that I didn't catch having watched this before. So Mulder is... I knew he was always really understated. I mean, to the point of... I don't know how he could get any more understated. It's almost artful.
Yes.
But he... Have you ever read or have you ever heard that is he connecting himself to Jack Webb from Dragnet in any way? Because I had watched, what did I watch? Something about Dragnet recently. And they are both so purposefully understated and just, you know, no emotion.
Right.
And I wondered if there's ever been any conscious connection to that or that's just coincidence or something.
Oh, maybe he used that as a reference point or something.
Because they're so similar.
Yeah.
Like, no bullshit detective, but they're not, you know, they don't beat people around. They just don't take any nonsense.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. Mulder is more engaged in certain episodes than others. So, like, in this one, he's really disengaged.
Yeah, I guess
like,
so.
He's trying to quit. Like, he's like, let's just go home. Like, there's one part where Scully's like, let's go talk to the kid's dad again. Let's go talk to the kid's dad. And he's like, but he's in an asylum.
He cannot be trusted.
Yeah, we've been to crazy places for you, Mulder. We've been to, like, submarines in the Arctic and like, police airplane hangars in Iowa and stuff. Like, just go to this for me. He makes like a pedophilia joke, right? Very disgruntled altar boy.
Yeah.
That feels a little, I don't know.
Not as bad as the next episode where she says, more than my mind, you guys are interested in expanding. Do you remember that? Well, I mean, we'll get to that, but that was like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a really, really interesting episode too.
Yeah.
I also like when Mulder and Scully go in to talk to that kid. Like, don't take this the wrong way, but that's a good looking kid, right?
Yeah,
that kid's a stud.
Yeah, he's almost too good looking. I couldn't take my eyes off him.
When they walk in, it's like sort of understood. Like Mulder just goes with the principal, and Scully goes to the kid. Like where he's like, listen, you can talk to kids. I have nothing. I can't connect. So, do you believe in aliens?
That's the thing about all the people who aren't Mulder and Scully in this. They are so soundly Canadian. And I mean that.
Yes.
Like, they're just, it's not just accents. Like the way they look, everything is so heavily Canadian.
Oh, yeah. It's Canadian as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a great place to shoot because it looks beautiful, but it also, all of it looks like Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Tyler Labine's in the next episode.
And I did a double take as soon as he came on. And yeah. That's right. This is all Canadian. And
he's Canadian.
Put it together. Yeah. 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 That was hilarious.
Yeah, Mulder's totally checked out of this. Yeah, he says, but the father's in an institution. That's the part where he just sort of... the full circle stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's what he says in the beginning. And you kind of want to be like, just tell me what you fucking mean. Like, don't play games. Aren't you trying to save your kid? But right. Then later it's just the recycling sign that feels like it's not enough of a payoff, right?
And there's the father in confession says it at the end.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They really hit it hard.
Yeah. Literally and figuratively, the episode came full
That's
circle.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Also that bad guy who keeps renting cars under the name Pharrell, which is the devil's minion. Like, just go with Smith or something. You don't have to put your stamp on everything. Like, you don't have to catch him.
You don't have to brand him.
No. What's your name? Pharrell. No last name. Pharrell the Dark.
I'm a bit of a performance artist. Yeah. That's a hobby. I mean, I have some other goals. I can't talk about those, but here's my card.
Exactly. Yeah, I do illusions and stuff.
Well, you see, have you watched Black Mirror?
No, is it great? Is it?
I don't know about that, but it is. The first episode is worth watching. It's kind of like a modern day Twilight Zone. Every episode is a different story.
Is it like a sci-fi thing?
Yeah, some of it is, but the first episode, I won't say anything, but it just starts with a prime minister in a rough situation, and I don't know, there's a slight connection to what we were just talking about. But
oh, really?
That episode is worth watching, whether it's good or not, just for like, this isn't something I've seen before.
Is it like sort of, I've heard that it's like technology based, is that right?
This one isn't, but okay. Some of them are, yeah.
Okay.
And it's like a dystopian, either parallel universe or a little bit in the future, but it's more just about psychological twists and, I will say nothing more. But
okay,
yeah,
I'll
it's
watch
worth
it.
No, checking out.
It's like everyone's sort of been talking about it.
It along with this show, it would, you know, it's worth exploring, and I would be curious to see what you think of the first episode.
Okay.
National Anthem is the title of the first episode.
Is it an hour, or is it like an hour and a half?
It's under an hour.
Oh, okay.
I think, yeah.
I like that. Oh, yeah, the one the kids are describing, Michael Berryman, his hair burned off in hell. It's just not very nice. Because he's read the whole script, right? He's seen like, oh, I'm not here for this scene, but this is how they're describing me. I'm sure that's the first time someone is like that.
I bet he goes through the script every part he gets, and he's like, well, all right, let's see how many references to how weird I look are in this script.
I hope he tells the producers, like, just give me my scenes and give me zero scenes where someone's talking about me.
Yeah, tell me how much time I need between my lines.
Yes.
I don't even want to know what the other person's
yes.
lines are.
Yeah,
I wear
yeah,
earplugs,
yeah.
Just so you know.
I have earplugs in. You just point at me and I'll say my line.
Is he still alive?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I saw him in something not too long ago. I feel like he's sort of a professor or something like
that.
Oh,
I hope so.
Here, I'm going to look this up real quick. Owen Jarvis is his name. Yeah, Homer Simpson's evil twin is what he calls him. I feel like this episode has a lot of the structure is they have the kid, they lose the kid, they have the kid, they lose the kid. Like that just happens sort of over and over.
Visit the dad, go back to the dad.
Yeah, go back to the dad, visit the dad. I guess maybe it's the cyclical nature that they're going for. I don't know.
Did they ever really explain how the kid splits in two?
Nope. I read a lot of like production notes on this episode and everyone was like, that was the part that really was very difficult to make sense for us. And they said that
why do it?
Yeah, I don't know why. Because it really didn't need to be a major thing. It didn't need to be a thing at all.
It was just a device to save the woman when her car was busted and
but
then they used it once.
But there are other ways to do that. Yeah. You don't have to split the kid in two. And before that, Scully says that they saw the kid in two different spots.
Right.
It should either be a major thing or
nothing
at all.
Because it was an interesting idea, but it doesn't play out exactly.
He's still around. he is, it's called ectodermal dysplasia is what the thing is that he has.
He's meaning like his skin is just connected in an odd way, is it?
His I don't know.
He looked like, does he not have fingernails or something too? Did you notice that?
I don't know. And yeah. I mean, he's aging gracefully. I mean, I would love to meet this guy. They say he goes to like conventions and stuff a lot. He's
That would be nice to have him on my I Was There Too podcast. He would talk about The Hills Have Eyes.
He would be great.
He's probably been in a million. Oh, he's in Weird Science too, right?
He's in a lot of things.
Yeah, like Road Warrior guys. And
He'd be
amazing.
I bet he'd be great.
Yeah.
Because he seems like a very smart dude.
Yeah.
I also the attic thing. They go up to find the kid in the attic and the kid's not there, and then it cuts to them interrogating him, the guy in the attic. So they were like, all right, well, let's bring him up to the attic to interrogate him.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's just the lighting's way better in here. it just looks so much cooler. We've got the purple lighting that, you know, we love at X-Files.
And he needs to jump out of a window, and First Story ain't going to cut it. So.
Right. Yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah, point A to point Z. It is funny when you're getting into the third season of a show, I do think they're... At this point, they're like, we've got how many episodes a season? Let's do a little reverse engineering where we know this is the result. Let's just make it happen.
And oh, yeah. There was one episode where I had the writer on, and he said, I'd seen a picture of a python that had ingested a goat. And I was like, a python ingesting a man. And he said he wrote that on a cue card, put that under Act 3, and was like, all right, let's make a whole episode so that we get to that at some point.
Oh, my God.
And then it's a really great episode.
Really?
Yeah, it's a really great. It's about the satanic school where all the it's sort of like the faculty.
Oh, wow.
But instead of aliens, they're like Satan worshippers and stuff. Oh, but they've sort of lapsed to comments on religion quite a bit. It's like people who... And so the devil sort of comes back to be like, hey, you guys aren't worshiping me enough. I'm going to fuck things up for you. I'm going to make you believe again. What's that one called? It's called... it's got a weird name. It's called Die Hand die Verletzt, which means the hand that something. It's a German term. But it's really, really... It's a really great episode.
Dustin, why did you laugh when the German...
I think I like. Oh yeah, Mulder says. I wonder why I sleep in on Sundays. Like, he's just such a dick.
I know.
Which I know people who are very, very dismissive of religion, and they'll talk to someone who's very religious, and they're like, "That's stupid. Why are you doing that?" I don't think that's the way to talk.
No,
about
it's not. You can think what you want, but you got to be respectful. But it's funny when these episodes are back to back because she's on the phone with him the whole time. Like, no, it's just this. Check his eyes. You know? No,
yeah.
That's not that.
Yeah. And that one, the next one, War of the Coprophages, really, really dials up that specific aspect of their relationship where it's like, he has a crazy theory, she dismisses it. He has a crazy theory, she dismisses it. but we'll get to that. I also think it's weird whenever there's religious stuff in a show or movie, like miracle stuff, and then the character like believes in it because of a miracle or something crazy that happens, it feels so contrived to me because it's like, well, the character just the writer just wrote that everything that's happening is a miracle. It's everything that's happening, there's a purpose to it, right? So I never buy when people have epiphanies, religious epiphanies, because of miracles.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, and they never, I mean, Scully's contending with the fact that this happened, but they never really comment on the fact that this kid is going to go on living his life. He has stigmata and he can split in two. Like, he's a superhuman being.
Yeah, we should put him in a lab.
Yes.
And some sort of like containment unit. Yeah.
At the very least, he should get his own show.
Yeah. You know? that kid, the actor that plays that kid, he's on Twitter. I see him tweeting on Twitter.
Really? Does he still work? Or
yeah, I think so. He grew up into a hot grown-up also.
Oh, of course he did.
Like, he's very like...
Yeah, Canadian hot.
Yeah, he's Canadian hot, which is like very hot, but also very nice.
That's the best hot to be, I think, is Canadian
hot.
Oh,
yeah.
Because you're not a, you know, sex symbol. You're still a friendly, approachable guy.
I mean, the girl from Silicon Valley, Amanda Crew, she's very, very attractive. And her boyfriend is very, very attractive. They're both Canadian, so they're both very nice.
Yeah.
Which is really infuriating.
Yeah, it is, in a way.
Yeah.
Loathsome.
really, really loathsome. Just be assholes. I like when she's doing the autopsy on the guy, and Mulder calls him St. Owen, making fun of her.
Yeah.
And then at the end, before he leaves, he says St. Owen again. Did you catch that?
No.
He just whispers it again. So he's like talking. He's like, all right, I'm done. And as he's leaving, he's just like, St. Owen. Like he says it like I said that. I was very proud of it.
He's
going to get another one in.
He's incredible. Was this his first real thing, The X-Files? Or?
Yeah, he's done like little stuff. Like he was, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter is Dead. He's like a bad guy in it.
Really?
So he was like a bad guy in a bunch of sort of things. I think he'd already done Red Shoe Diaries. You know Red Shoe Diaries?
Yeah. I've never seen it, but I know of it.
You've never seen Red Shoe Diaries? Uh-uh. Do you know what it is? It's like softcore porn.
Yeah.
And so he's, I believe, in the first episode, and then the rest of it, he just gets letters, and he reads the letters. He's the narrator.
He's the connective tissue of Red Shoe Diaries.
Yeah, he's the framing device. Because really, so what softcore porn needs is devices. You could just cut to two people going at it. Nobody cares how they got there, that she's a DJ or, you know, whatever it is.
I applaud their efforts.
Yeah.
And their casting, I mean, they were considering things. They could have put anybody in there, but they found a talented
person. Yeah, they found a guy who was like, who could act, who was good. Jerusalem Syndrome. I wanted to hear more about that guy's story because he was a guy who went to Jerusalem, had some sort of epiphany. The bad guy did, Pharrell.
Yeah.
Some sort of epiphany. Then he comes back and he's clearly made some sort of deal with the devil or something, or he's become one of his minions. I wanted to hear more about that because that seems interesting to me.
It felt like this could have been a longer episode or something. And that actor, I really like that actor. He's actually really funny when he plays kind of a bad guy in comedies. I can't remember what I want to say, like Strangers with Candy or something. He's in that and he plays
Canadian.
Yeah, man. If you wanted to work in the 90s,
go to Vancouver.
Just move to Canada. Yeah. In the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I felt like I could have, this whole cast has probably been in the one full episode of Battlestar Galactica together.
That's right. And the kid's mom is also dead. Dad is crazy. Mom is dead. In the car accident,
she died?
Yeah, she dies. And the kid,
I don't think
says,
I put that together.
Yeah, she dies. And he says, she died because of me. And Scully's like,
That's right.
Well, technically, that is kind of true. I mean, I can't deny that. It's not your fault. But if you, she does die because of whatever your weirdo powers are.
So what does happen to this kid? His father's institutionalized.
He becomes a supervillain.
He has to.
He becomes a bad guy.
Yeah, he shoots blood out of his hands. just full stream power.
Yeah, well, does that mean that now he needs to, like, drink orange juice and stuff if he has stigmata? Right? Because you've lost blood.
Yeah.
I mean, does he have to get transfusions? I mean, you never hear about that.
I once was working on this, I don't know if it was a comic book or something called Rise of the Infirm, and it was people who are superheroes because of their disabilities, and Pfizer the Geyser Fenimon or something, he was a hemophiliac, and he would shoot blood, but he wore a backpack of blood infused like IV thing.
Oh, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, he had to keep it coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this kid is just like, he has stigma and he's like, I gotta go lay down for a while.
He's gonna take the little rig that Arlie Ermey had and wear that.
But with real blood.
Yeah.
Don't taste that. Oh, so gross. Don't get cute with the naming for out. Just fucking pick any name. I thought, again, the full circle recycling thing. I thought that was a bit of a cop-out. And why didn't he just kill the kid? And that's a cool-looking recycling place.
Yeah.
Also, do you know where that recycling place was? Because they talk about it. What town it was in? What town they go to?
No.
Jerusalem, Ohio.
Wow.
Really going for it,
yeah.
Huh?
They
yeah,
they tie these things together.
Why doesn't he just kill the kid in the shredder thing right away? Why is he like having a big conversation with him?
Yeah.
Why does he need to kill him
one
there?
One push.
He could kill him anywhere.
Right.
I was trying to think of some sort of recycling. Is there like a resurrection thing in this? But there really isn't, right?
No, I think it was more to the fact that recycling was such a big socially conscious thing at the time. It's like how the James Bond movies use whatever new technological invention is big at the time.
Oh, really?
As part of a plot device. Like a jet ski was big in The Spy Who Loved Me, and a snowboard in A View to a Kill. And,
oh, like as soon as it happens, like, Casino Royale, it's all about
parkour. Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah, and then that's when like also poker had a resurgence. Uh-huh. It was in a bunch of movies.
You're
so, like,
not
that's
kidding.
A big
that's
part of it.
Seriously. So the new one's coming out next year, and it'll be those
water jetpacks that, Leonardo DiCaprio uses. I hope not.
Like Eastbound and Down had them too.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's right. It's already been parodied. I'm glad they parodied it first instead of used it sincerely somewhere else.
Yeah, I did a movie where one of the characters is on that. And those things are like, you could do a lot of, you can actually do a lot of stuff with them.
Really?
You can like, well, this guy, Bobby Moynihan.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know him?
I don't know him personally.
SNL guy? He was the one on it, and he got, like, really good at, like, moving around.
Really?
Like, it was pretty, What I love about those things is that they look kind of cool, but also really shitty. So it's, like, a good comedy thing.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, right on the cusp of cool and, like, really lame looking.
Yeah. You can't look elegant.
No.
Or you really need some time. But even if you're good at it, it's still...
It's very loud.
Unwieldy thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of slow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you can't leave the lake.
You can't leave the lake.
Finite.
Yeah. And there's a, I think there's like a cord that's connected to something. So you,
isn't it that it's connected to the water and it's sucking water up?
Oh, yeah.
So could you theoretically go so high that your cord would come out of the.
And then you just fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a real lesson in mortality.
Yeah.
You know, like you have to know your limits.
If you die on a jetpack, like that's really like very Icarus-like.
Yeah.
You literally flew too high, and so you died.
And I ran out of water.
Yeah. I called that she was obviously going to go to church at the end, and when she's like, do you believe in miracles? And he's like, of course. The priest is like, of course, the rising of the sun, the birth of a child. And she's like, that bullshit is why I haven't been to the church in 6 years.
I agree that the birth of a child is a wonderful thing, but it isn't a miracle because it not only happens every single day, it's likely to happen.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
We can scientifically prove it.
Yeah.
We know why it happens.
Isn't the thing about a miracle is it's really rare?
Yeah, it's really rare and you can't explain it with science. Like that's what a miracle is.
Right.
Birth of a baby is like science 101.
We've had that for a while.
We nailed that. We know how long they're pregnant for. Even if it was like every baby was like had a variable time, that would be closer to a miracle.
Magnets. Now that's a miracle.
That's a miracle.
Yeah, we still don't
that's
have
a
that.
Real miracle.
I kept thinking the priest in that confession, because they just show him in silhouette, like that's someone that's got to be a cameo.
Nope, just some Canadian dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Apparently, I heard they dubbed over his voice. They didn't like the guy's voice. They didn't like the guy they cast, so they like dubbed over that whole thing.
That somehow makes sense. It didn't.
It felt weird, right?
Weird. Yeah,
felt a little weird. And yeah, like I said, this episode was one that the producers. It's someone who's only written 2 episodes. This one, and they wrote an episode coming out later called Quagmire that was then rewritten by Darren Morgan, who wrote the next episode. And they said they just had a lot of trouble with, like, religion is a hard thing to tackle in something like The X-Files.
Both of these episodes I found really started strong and then kind of didn't fully pan out for me.
Well, yeah, this one especially, like, I like the guy. I like the idea of, like, a real demon guy killing fake, like, huckster, like, preachers.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, like a serial killer guy going
around. And I love the element of his fingerprints being burned into their necks.
Yeah, that was cool.
Was super cool, yeah.
Yeah, And the special effect when he's strangling them and the smoke's coming out.
Yeah.
I thought that looked cool. There were cool images. There's also when the kid's in the laundry basket and starts having stigmata, which is like, come on, if God's on his side, this is the worst time. But the image of the bleeding laundry basket I thought was cool.
Yeah.
The hamper. But that's just bad timing. Whose side is God on?
I know.
Don't be on Pharaoh's side. afraid that God is speaking, but that no one is listening.
I love that your notebook, it feels like a relic, like a biblical relic or something.
Yeah.
It's got kind of eight weathered pages. And
yeah, I have terrible handwriting.
No, you don't. It really looks authentic, like you found it somewhere and that's how you decided to do this podcast.
Yeah, like, I've actually never seen the show. I've just read these notes. I don't know who they're from.
What's the cover look like?
It's just black.
Yeah, that could be from any era.
It's like the thing that Indiana Jones has Hitler sign in Last Crusade.
The Grail Diary.
The Grail Diary.
Yeah. You should put a picture of that up because that looks like a scrawlings of a madman.
Yeah.
It's a serial killer.
It truly is scrawlings of a madman. I was sort of in Pakistan at our school, like handwriting was a big thing. Everyone had to learn to write in cursive. And everyone had to use fountain pens.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so we all had little ink pots, and we had to fill our pens, and we'd wipe it on our hair. So every kid, if you ran your fingers through the hair, which don't do that, your hands would get all inky.
Wait, you purposefully wipe to clear the nib of like excess ink?
Well, because you dip it into the inkwell pot, and then when it comes out, I mean, you're supposed to use a tissue paper or whatever because it's on the sides of the, there's ink on the sides of the pen, yeah, the whole front half of the pen. But yeah, we had to do that, and I remember.
But wait, you're still glossing over the point that you'd wipe it in your hair.
I'd wipe it in my hair.
You didn't have tissue all the time.
No, and we all had black hair in Pakistan. Yeah, everybody had dark hair. There weren't blonde kids with streaks of blue. We were all.
So you were all wiping ink in your hair? That was just a thing?
Yeah, because it was black ink, and we all had black hair. I'd never thought of that, but
that's a wonderful story.
It was just every kid had like ink in their hair. You just couldn't see it.
That to me is. Like, you would read that in great literature. That's just a little detail.
Just like a weird little detail.
When I was a kid, we were all wiping ink in our hair.
We also, for Islam class, it was pretty strict schooling there. We had to have a little hat, like a Muslim hat. Have you seen that? It's like a bigger yarmulke.
I think so.
Really, Islam and Judaism are so close to each other, and the fact that they don't get along is... If it wasn't sad, it would be hilarious.
It's the lady doth protest too much. You guys really like each other.
Exactly.
But you won't
admit
it.
We're both playing hard to get.
Yeah, for sure.
We had to wear those hats. And I remember they were all white. And you would see they would have ink stains on them because people would wear the white hats with ink on their heads.
I love it. That's I love details like that.
So the next episode is War of the Coprophages. Coprophages mean shit eaters.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, and I think it's sort of with this episode. I thought the opening is great, where he's like, "Behold the mighty cockroach," and then he just—I don't know—I just kill him.
Yeah.
I thought that was really
and
cool.
And his extermination company is called Dr. Bugger. Did you notice that?
No.
On his jacket. Yeah. And I feel like that's even the writers going like, in England that means a whole different thing. Let's put it in there.
Yeah. The guy who wrote this episode wrote four total episodes. The other three he wrote are classics, and they're on lists of like top 10, top 20, always, always, always. I interviewed him a few weeks ago. This is the episode he doesn't like.
Really?
He talks about, he doesn't like it. Each of his episodes have like a big main theme. So the first episode is about a town where freak show people live, and that sort of subverts the X-Files because it's like, in the X-Files, the people who are different are usually the bad guys. Uh-huh. They're the monsters. They're the mutants. And this one, they're the good guys. And they're looking at Mulder and Scully like, you guys are boring. We're interesting. So he subverts that. And it's also about like finding your community. And that's the theme of that. Then the next episode is Peter Boyle, he wrote. And Peter Boyle is a guy who can see the future.
Uh-huh.
And so that episode, and he said, if I thought like if someone can see the future, that means the future's written, which means we don't have free will. So that episode is all about free will versus determinism.
Oh
like, can you affect something? So this guy's seen something in the future. Is there any way to change it? So that's a pretty big idea. Then the last one he did is called Jose Chung's From Outer Space. And that one's sort of a Rashomon kind of thing where it's different people's perspective. Uh-huh. And that's sort of the nature of storytelling and memory and a bunch of other stuff. This one is trying to find the theme.
Yeah, I can already see where this one doesn't quite fit in that level of exploration. Or
right.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, is it maybe that he's saying that we're not... Because Dr. Bambi has these sort of theories where she talks about like cockroaches are true to themselves. They're not lying. They eat, they fuck, they do this. And we're the ones who are like sort of creating stuff around it. And then the idea... So ultimately at the end, all these deaths are sort of coincidental. Like no real X-File is happening, right?
No, yeah. I think that was the thing when she said that. And she herself, like, you thought that this was really going to go somewhere where she was going to be like, look, all I want to do is eat, defecate, mate, and sleep. And come on, let's do this, Mulder.
We've already eaten.
But she basically leaves with a scientist who you feel like
he
gets
that.
It. Well,
he gets it.
And that's kind of more what she wants is that understanding. But they didn't really explore that either. So I'm with you. I couldn't really find anything.
Yeah, I feel like they didn't hit that home. The scientist who makes the robot bugs, and then he's kind of robotic himself, that's some sort of thing.
But even their shortcut to make him like a Stephen Hawking by just putting a microphone,
yeah.
literally that he has to push his neck against to make it seem like it's attached to him in some way, was a little lazy. I think.
Yeah, it was a little lazy. I thought, so I was trying to think, right? So in this episode, it's all this random deaths are happening, and Mulder is trying to come up with a reason for it. Everybody is, and there's like paranoia and stuff, so it comments on the nature of paranoia a little bit.
Yeah.
So I was like, is he saying, this is such a stretch, stay with me, I don't even know if I can explain it or articulate it. These animals don't really have anything. They're just doing what they do, right? We're trying to sort of come up with reasons and stories and sort of a narrative and, you know, cause and effect and all this stuff. So is it that we're trying so hard that even in this town where random shit is happening, these guys are like trying to form some sort of narrative around it? Like that's sort of the nature of conspiracy.
Interesting.
Is
they're
putting
trying
a
to put
pattern,
meaning to something.
Yeah, putting a pattern on there. Something that doesn't have a mean have a pattern, like that's what Mulder's whole thing is. I don't know.
Did the writer say anything about
I haven't
this?
Talked to him about this one yet.
Oh.
So I talked about the first two and then he's gonna come back and we're gonna talk about these two. And he doesn't want to talk about this one.
At all.
Yeah, he doesn't even call it by his name. He calls it the cockroach episode.
Oh my god.
This guy's
well, maybe
a genius.
I mean that may be saying something that maybe he didn't really have.
Apparently
anything.
What I read was he's notoriously a slow writer. He rewrites a lot, and this one he wrote in a week.
Oh.
So he didn't have time to get everything in. So you can sort of feel that this interesting idea is the idea that Mulder's always calling Scully and she's debunking.
Yeah, and why do you think they're split up in this episode? I couldn't figure out why, like what was that never quite.
From what I understand, she only had a couple of days to shoot this episode.
Okay, I wondered if it was purely logistical.
And from what I read, I think it's Darren Morgan, the writer who said it, was that she had to do a press tour for The X-Files.
Oh.
And so for that, they had to do it so that they had to get all her scenes in a day or something. So she's separate. It's also kind of cool. Like
sense.
What this guy does a lot is he comments on the nature of their relationship and about how it's maybe not as healthy as it seems because they don't really have any other people. They have each other.
Yeah.
This one, Mulder tries to get with Bambi, doesn't work out. So separating them, I guess it's easier to bring into focus the nature of their relationship.
Yeah.
And I think some of that stuff is pretty funny.
That's really interesting that they would sacrifice the potential quality of an episode.
For promotion.
Yeah, to promote what may end up being an inferior product.
Right. Yeah.
Also, Bambi, Canadian hot.
Yeah, Canadian hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's great. Like,
she was interesting.
She's really hot.
Yeah, but there's still something. She was kind of perfect casting in a way.
I think she was only like 21 or 22 when that episode
what?
Happened. So, yeah, for her to be like a big, yeah. So I think that's part of the
weirdness. But I love how she's a scientist, but she's kind of based, like dressed like a mix between Tomb Raider and Marianne from Gilligan's Island. Kind of like explorers. Shorts, but she's living in a house of cockroaches.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was just a lot of good, interesting things, but nothing fully came together.
Yeah, I feel like it needed a little bit more, but a lot of these X-Files, like both of these, like I said, are interesting. I like that you've drawn pictures to go with your notes.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, there's a cockroach in one and then a stigmata in the
pentagram.
The pentagram, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen, do you know Guillermo del Toro?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen his diaries?
No, are they like that?
They're really, really cool. Like, he sort of says that this is where he takes notes, but he says everything he wants to do wants to be like a product, not in a way that you sell it, but in like a piece of art,
I get
a thing
it.
Of beauty. And so he has like drawings and then he writes around the drawings and like inserts drawings into the middle of writing. It's all like very laid out. It's very cool. So it's drawings from Pan's Labyrinth while he's talking about Pan's Labyrinth. It's really, really cool.
I totally get it. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I feel like if I write stuff and make it cool looking, I want to read it more and I want to write more.
Yeah.
Instead of just random shit, you know? And this guy does a lot of... one of his big things, Darren Morgan, the writer, is he plays with expectations. Like he twists them.
Certainly, I've noticed that.
Yeah. So in the first, when the guy's talking about Behold the Mighty Cockroach, and then it turns out he's just an exterminator. He does that stuff a lot.
Yeah.
A lot in the other episodes. Not as much in this one. I really got obsessed with that actress and kind of looked up a bunch of stuff about her.
What did she go on to do?
Her name's Bobby Phillips. She did some other stuff.
Battlestar
nothing too
Galactica.
Big. I thought that I'd seen her in a lot of stuff, but I guess I just had seen her in this and made it. She made an impression.
But I've never seen this episode, and she has. That's the thing with Canadian Hot is they come packaged with familiarity.
Yeah, they somehow remind you of the girl you had a crush on in high school.
No kidding.
And
I mean,
your teacher.
Yeah.
And like your dad's friend's hot wife.
Yeah. They're genetically engineered with marketability or something. Yeah. I don't know.
And like a Playboy bunny.
Yeah.
Everything together.
It's they're TV ready. They're camera ready.
Yeah, yeah.
What did Darren Morgan go on to write after this?
He sort of quits the X-Files after these four episodes, and then he didn't. I think he's such a perfectionist, and he had like deals at a bunch of studios and stuff, and wrote a bunch of scripts. I don't know if anything got made, but. And his brother is Glenn Morgan, who created like the Final Destination series, and he's done a bunch of TV shows. So Darren has sort of worked with him off and on over the years. But I kind of want him to like do something, like do a movie or create a TV show. I just feel like he's sort of he's just sort of his own guy, you know. I don't think he gets anything out of it. Like I was talking to him about Clyde Bruckman, which is my favorite episode. That's the Peter Boyle episode. And he just had so many problems with it. Mm. So he's just, I think, it's just hard for him because he has a very high standard. He said this one really funny thing where I was like, you're really hard on yourself. And he was like, I'm harder on other people. So he's like, I don't like my stuff, but my stuff is better than all the other shit, which is really terrible. I thought that was really like a great illuminating thing for him to say. This episode also has specific points where, so what he does in his episodes is, Scully's kind of the good guy, and he makes Mulder like sort of an idiot.
Uh-huh.
So in this one, someone's always sort of offering Mulder different explanations of UFOs. So Dr. Bambi is saying that they're clusters of insects, not irradiated, but luminous insects. And then the other doctor, the robot doctor, talks about how it's stupid to think of aliens. That's an idiotic thing. There would be little robots that they sent here. So he keeps like puncturing Mulder and what he stands for in all his episodes, and he does it in this one too, and he kind of makes him out to be a bit of an idiot, right?
Uh-huh.
But because he like falls for Bambi. I thought that scene where he first sees Bambi and he's on the phone, he's like, gotta go. And then he hangs up.
I know.
That was pretty badass.
Yeah, that quickly.
What's your take on, are you a big Planet of the Apes guy?
No, I never, I mean, I think I've seen all of the originals at some point, but I never, because it came to it after Star Wars, same thing with Star Trek. I can appreciate Star Trek, but it never, once I saw Star Wars, my life changed and it just wasn't as exciting to me as Star Wars. So it never took.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I get that.
And I mean, I saw Star Wars in the theater and it's the first movie going experience I remember. And I mean, it just. That my life became Star Wars.
How are you feeling about the new preview?
And the first time I saw it, I was like, I don't know. It seems a little CG. And then I watched it like 300 more times. And I started to really enjoy it.
So. I like that it's sort of minimal looking compared to the prequels.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, the only time that didn't really work for me in the end was the camera following the Millennium Falcon all around.
That felt a little Star Trek.
Yeah.
The new Star Trek rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah, but like the guy rising up into like the dune. It's so simple.
I know. I loved that.
And that's the first image you see of the new Star Wars.
That I was big on. And then it cut to the soccer ball droid and it took a little used to getting used to, you know.
But you know, by time 147, you got on board.
I was ready. I wanted to see it
again. Soccer ball droid.
Yeah. By then I had given it a name.
Yeah. What's the name?
Partially Kim.
Partially Kim.
I don't know.
Partially Kim's a great name for it. And then Scully also punctures Mulder. She says the idea that there would be life anywhere else is statistically improbable.
Yeah, which is surprising.
Surprising.
She's a scientist, and it seems like even
it seems likely.
Yeah, because I mean I love science, and absolutely, if believe is the right word, just statistically believe that there's life out there. But I'm sort of very skeptical too with UFO people. You know,
yeah,
like, come on.
Right.
Let's all agree that it's out there, but let's also agree that the people that claim to have seen UFOs are something a little different.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you want more water?
No, I'm all right.
You're literally drinking.
Yeah, I do.
It's a completely empty glass.
No, I'm good.
I can get you more water. Are you sure
you're still in this glass?
You're still going to drink it? Oh, God. Very sad.
Last drip.
So sad. There were fun exchanges in it. Like you said, it doesn't really come together, but there were fun exchanges where Mulder's sitting in the car and the sheriff comes to him. It's like, he tells him lights and he's like, the FBI keeps track of these things. And he's like, no, which really like sort of gets to what Mulder is. He's like in the FBI. Why is he even in the fucking FBI?
I know.
None of his goals line up with the FBI's goals.
Explain this to me as someone who's only marginally familiar with this show.
Yeah.
Is he supposed to be doing other work? He's tasked with this stuff, or
yes, he is. But almost every episode, he does a thing. The missions he chooses are not ones that they want him to do.
He's still working there. How has he not been fired by?
Well, that's a big whole thing. It's like, why don't they just kill him or get rid of him? But it's like his role in the conspiracy, like, is a big crazy thing.
Okay, yeah.
He's got certain people on his side. It's revealed by this point that his dad is a part of the big alien conspiracy.
Oh, okay.
So, like, that sort of protects him a little bit. So, it's like that. And Devin Faraci, who's done this episode of this show a bunch, he's a movie reviewer guy. He said Mulder's like a kid of privilege who, like, is rebelling against his parents, you know? Like, you have those, like, rich kids whose parents are lawyers, and then they pick it against lawyers. That's kind of what he's doing
but they still benefit from all that.
Oh, yes, of course. Okay. He still gets the benefits, and that everybody else gets killed for no reason, and he's still alive.
Yeah.
Miller's Grove, this is interesting. So this town has a lot of hysteria and paranoia going. Miller's Grove is the name of the town, and that's the town that Orson Welles made up when he did the War of the Worlds thing.
That's awesome.
I guess that's where War of the Worlds is set. So that's an interesting little connection, because this town is gripped by paranoia. And
that's right.
When he'd read it on the radio, it freaked people out.
That's awesome. I love when Mulder gets attacked by the cockroaches and he's on the phone with Scully.
Mm-hmm.
And his line is, I'm surrounded. he's being overrun with cockroaches. I'm surrounded.
For all he knows, it's killer cockroaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by Duchovny and how he can get away.
It's very understated. He's barely doing anything.
And I want to say it'd be easy to say he just doesn't care, but that's not it, is it? That's his style. But
he's way more animated in this episode than he is in most episodes.
Really?
Yeah, where he's like, gotta go. And when he hits on her, like, I thought it was funny when he's talking to Dr. Bambi, he's like, I've always been so fascinated by insects. And then you see the electricity going in the thing. That was a cute little thing.
I think it's directly related to the fact that his jawline is so incredibly horizontal that he has to expend more energy to open his jaw wider to get more out. And so he's just easier if he just talks through clenched teeth.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
He does have a very horizontal jaw.
His jaw is incredible.
Oh, yeah. He's a great looking guy.
Yeah, he's...
That's the other thing that Darren Morgan was talking about. He's like, he's supposed to be this pariah and like outcast. Like, nobody that looks like that is an outcast.
No.
You're too attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he somehow has that Canadian attractiveness. He's not even Canadian, is he? I don't think.
No, he's not Canadian, I don't think. There's another fun one where the doctor is like, I see them every time I close my eyes, and the sheriff's like, try not to close your eyes.
I know.
Yeah.
But how will I sleep?
Yeah. That guy's really going for it.
Yeah.
I see that guy he's in a bunch of stuff.
Really?
Right? That actor?
I don't know.
I feel like I've seen him in things.
Yeah. He's a Richard Jenkins type.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. The bugs under the skin, I don't like seeing that ever.
That was good special effects for a TV show at this time.
Yeah. No, it's pretty good.
Let's talk about Tyler Labine a little bit, too, with his bleached blonde hair. And that's hilarious.
Like a stoner kid. Do you know him?
I do. I don't know him well, but a little bit. Yeah.
He's in Deadbeat?
Yeah.
That show?
And my girlfriend Amanda was in that movie he did called Someone Marry Barry.
Oh, and my friend Thomas Middleditch is in there.
Yes.
From Silicon Valley.
And then now I work at Wolf Pop developing podcasts part-time or as whatever as a consultant. And he and his buddies have a show called Picking Favorites on there.
Tyler Labine,
yeah.
Wow. There's five people in the world.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And they're most of them Canadian.
Is Someone Mary Barry good?
It's fun.
Okay.
it's like, Yeah, I mean, it has its moments.
Who else is in it? Isn't somebody else in it? Isn't it like
Damon Wayans Jr.?
Damon Wayans Jr. Yeah. is in it.
Yeah. And Lucy Punch.
She's great.
Yeah.
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 Those, it's got a great cast.
Those two are really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's all about them anyway.
Yeah. It's got a really, really good cast. It's so hard to make a good movie. Not that I'm saying that's a bad movie. I just haven't seen it. It's so hard to make something that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. Everything has to go right to make a good movie.
Right. Yeah.
The dog, you don't know this, but the dog that she has, Queequeg is the name of the dog. The dog shows up in all of Darren Morgan's episodes, and then he gets, well, I won't say it.
Uh-oh.
His backstory, the dog's backstory, is that Clyde Bruckman, that's Peter Boyle, his old neighbor dies, and they don't find the body for a while. So the dog has been eating the old woman. And Scully, they're like, oh, we don't know what to do with this fucking dog. We can't tell anybody that she ate a woman. And so Scully takes the dog. That's that dog. That cute little dog's backstory is that they found the dog eating a dead woman.
Oh, my God.
Is that a real thing that happens?
This is a topic in my household.
Yeah?
Because we have this horrible cat that is the best, but also horrible. And Amanda, my girlfriend, has read this thing once where if you die in your house, dogs are loyal and they'll wait a few days before not being fed to eat you. But cats are basically like the minute you stop breathing,
oh, good.
Soup's on.
So much wet food.
Yeah. And they'll just, and to her, it was the thing that stuck with her is like, they're just going to eat your face. And so she.
That's the most accessible.
I think so.
It's
yeah.
Not under clothes.
Yeah.
It's
eyeballs, soft. Tongue. Yeah. Lips. And she was just worried that she'd fall asleep and that the cat would mistake her for dead and wake up with the cat eating her face.
I think you would wake up right away if the cat was eating your
Either
face.
Way, if there's not an X-Files episode about this, apparently there is.
Yeah, but yeah.
Why Queequeg? Isn't that a Moby Dick reference or something?
Yes, it's some sort of Moby Dick reference. Cause I don't know, because Mulder's, like, his quest is sort of like the captain's quest. I don't know.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's also her dad was a naval officer who dies in season one. And they call each other Starbuck. And, like, they call each other Moby Dick terms. I believe Starbuck is from Moby Dick, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've never read it. Yeah, I just feel like I have to have certain references to things for doing improv for so many years.
Yeah, me Ishmael. Yeah. That's as much as I know. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there's a guy with a harpoon who's like, a Native American or something.
Yeah.
Ahab, that's all I know.
Yeah, that's all I got too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should read it. It seems cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get to that.
The idea that there's one specific whale that this guy wants to kill seems like the least relatable thing in the world to me. Boy. Why do you want to kill this one thing?
It doesn't make me sympathize with him. It makes me think like...
Let it be out there.
Or my sympathy is that you have severe OCD. Like, that's what we need to deal with, not the whale.
Just turn on switches on and off instead of going to...
Wash your hands.
Did they have switches at that point?
They had levers.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, they've got things on a ship. They got ropes he could pull. Yeah. Absolutely.
You don't even have to be on a ship. Just at home, get a pulley system going and just tug on that.
Or a hobby scrimshaw, whatever. You know.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
You don't need to go out try to kill this one specific whale.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Whales aren't even assholes. They're like docile. Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Does he? What is his beef? With the whale, he wants revenge, or am I putting too much justification into this?
I'm sure there's revenge or something. It must have ruined a boat of his.
Yeah, it had to be.
I mean, we're literally sitting here talking about probably the most well-known and have no idea beyond four things.
And refusing to look it up.
We're
not going
I wish someone had this information.
Yeah, no, I don't want to know. Don't send us the story.
I know nobody's ever read Moby Dick.
Yeah.
That's that thing that, like, that book is always one that, like, that's the best book ever written, and it's sort of considered...
It's the white whale of literature.
That's exactly right.
You never read it.
You never read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Maybe it's never been written. It's the Emperor's New Clothes literature.
Like 40 pages and it's just blank? Yes.
Oh, man, that'd be amazing. Everybody says they've read it, but they haven't.
Yeah. That would
Because you always quote the first line, call me Ishmael,
yeah.
But you never hear about the last line.
No.
I got him.
No. No. And that's how I got him. That's the last word.
Who wants blubber? The end.
Yeah, exactly. Whale omelets for everyone. Well, they don't have eggs, right?
Well, get ready for the sequel. We're going after a hen.
Yeah, just a really great hen that this guy wants to kill. I thought of something that I was going to say with this. Oh, I don't know. Again, going back to X-Files, there's some fun lines where Mulder's like, how about some urine? For a drug test. What a weird random joke to make.
I know, because the guy didn't really respond like, oh, that's gross.
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, for a drug test, sure.
But it makes you think that Mulder's like... had some other alternatives.
He's into weird sex stuff.
Is he?
On the show.
Every part he plays. Red Shoe Diaries, Californication.
There's a big sex thing. And then in real life, do you remember when he said he was a sex addict?
Yeah.
That is the luxury of the very good looking.
Yeah.
Like, no ugly, but I'm a sex addict. No. Everybody likes sex.
Right.
That's... He could just get it more than most people.
Yeah, to the point where it was probably just messing with his meeting times. And
yeah, like that. Exactly.
That's really like a way to explain why he's missed a lot of meetings.
Yes. You know? And of course, his marriage crumbled because of it.
True.
Anyway.
What is this sheet you have? Because it almost looks like you typed this out. Is that just because, wow.
Oh, it's just double-sided. So maybe
it feels like a ditto, like a mimeograph ditto that I would have gotten junior high or something, which all of your notes have this like...
It's Courier, and you could tell notes in my notebook are when I'm watching it on my computer, and then when I'm watching it on a TV, they're on the computer.
Feels like you've got some kind of World War II commando dossier with that little field... book.
Yeah, I had like Native Americans like codify it. Yeah, I had them do it. Exactly. It's also in this one, Mulder has to be a little bit the rational one because the guy's like, are we in any danger? Should I evacuate my family? And he's like, how should I know? Like,
that's his rationale.
So dismissive.
Yeah. For yourself.
Completely checked out. And then,
if you're that dumb, I hope you die, is basically what he's saying. Yeah.
And then the guy says, after talking with Agent Mulder here, I feel slightly constipated. What a thing to say.
I know, that struck me as odd.
There's a lot of shit stuff. Okay, so here, again, I'm going to try and make sense more of the theme of the episode.
Yeah, because the shit is in this theme.
Yes, the shit is in the theme. Cockroaches eat shit. At the end, Mulder's eating that cake that's like kind of looks like shit.
Yeah.
And then when he's typing about technology, so it's like our most base element, which is eating, versus our least base element,
that's
which
right.
is technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the technology fucks up, so he smacks it to get it right. So I think it's like we're trying to transcend our animal nature with all these trappings of technology and structure and conspiracy theories, but ultimately we're just animals.
I think that had to be it. The fact that he hits the computer and that we're not good at doing what we think we are.
And it's at the word technology.
Yeah.
It's like tech, 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 and then he hits it. So I think it's something like that.
It has to be, yeah.
Yeah, but again, like you said, it's not really... It doesn't really come together like it does in the other ones. Like you sort of have to piece it together.
I feel
later.
Like they give it to you at the end, but in the middle they're not as focused on backing that up. It's almost like that end thing is like, oh yeah, we got to wrap this up with the theme.
Yeah.
And let's do that.
It's also just unsatisfying when things aren't like an episode with actual killer cockroaches would be really. That's a good bad guy.
Yeah.
In this one, the fact that it's all random stuff and it just feels a little like the cockroach infestation happens because the guy had brought manure over.
Right.
Right. And it's all like random stuff. It just is unsatisfying when that happens, when it's like a Scooby-Doo kind of ending.
Yeah. How would you like to be the guy that gets killed by the cockroaches in the hotel, though, and just to have them crawling all over you like that?
Well, I thought of that a lot because in a lot of this, like the first guy who dies, the exterminator is covered in cockroaches. That actor had to be covered in cockroaches.
And that guy in the motel, did you see his feet?
No.
You didn't look at his feet?
They're bad feet?
They were rough. they were more disturbing than any cockroach in that whole show.
I fucking hate cockroaches.
Well, check out this guy's feet because you're going to have a new enemy.
One of my... most traumatic memories is I was hanging out with my friends. I was a kid. I was probably like 12, very self-conscious. And in Pakistan, we have these flying cockroaches. And when a cockroach is flying, it doesn't look graceful. It's just like chaos flapping around is what it looks like.
God.
And they're pretty big. And so it's just like chaos blah, 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 flying around. One got into my shirt and started trying to fly away. So it was just like flapping. And I could hear it in my shirt, but I was with girls, I didn't want to take my shirt off because I felt so I was just like, and this fucking thing is flapping against my skin and I can feel it. I'm going back right now. It's so horrible.
Oh my God. So remember, what'd you do? What'd you, did you just...
I managed to somehow get it out by like... But it was like fucking freaking out in there. Another time I remember I was eating a cheese sandwich and there was a dead cockroach that it must have been dead for a long time. And I stepped on it by mistake. It was upside down. I caught it later. I stepped on it by mistake. And it made like a loud bang sound. Because like I think it was dried and there was air trapped in there. When I squished it, it like basically popped. And it was like bam! Like super loud. And I just put down my cheese sandwich, and I honestly couldn't eat cheese sandwiches for a while.
I don't blame you. That's funny you should mention that, because I watched these episodes yesterday, and I just realized last night I had a dream where I was eating a sandwich at a park, and bugs got all over it. But I was so hungry that I went to the water fountain and just watered down the sandwich to get the bugs off. And I didn't care that the sandwich was just sopping wet, because I was just about to shove it down my throat anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
And I ate it.
One of my recurring nightmares is I eat chocolate and there's bugs inside of like big, huge, like locusty bugs.
Oh, I remember, you know Jeff Davis? Yeah.
Yes.
He once told me a story where I think he woke up one morning and had like a Dr. Pepper from the night before, but there was like maybe half an inch of Dr. Pepper in there, and he drank it and it was all ants.
Oh.
That just rode the half inch of Dr. Pepper down his mouth or something.
In this episode, they say that killer bees, we made them. That's true.
And that's... Really?
Yeah. They bred two different kinds of bees together because they call them Africanized bees because I think they took like American bees, Africanized honeybees, cross between the Western honeybee species and the African honeybee.
But they didn't do that to make them killer bees. They just
They made them because they thought they'd make more honey. And then they ended up making these bees that are way more aggressive. They don't kill, but they're like way more aggressive. They'll pursue people for up to half a mile, which is fucking long. Can you imagine running from bees for half a mile?
But when you get to that half a mile mark and you keep going and they stop and you just turn like around and taunt them.
Fuck you.
Yeah, I made it. Was about bees,
There's a whole bee component to it that hasn't come on in the show yet, but that becomes a big thing. That's how they spread.
I remember something about that. Okay.
But we made Africanized. We made these bees, and then they sort of turned out. They started wiping out. What they do is they go in and take over other hives and stuff. We created monsters, and then they got out, and they somehow got to America, and now there's killer bees in the world, and we made them.
I do remember that as a kid. You know, they're like the myth of killer bees, and it was a legitimate fear.
Oh yeah, red ants, killer bees. Yeah. Like there were all kinds of scary things that were scarier than they really are. Ebola shows up in this.
That's right. Yeah. And it's, was there like an Ebola scare in the 90s?
In the 90s, there was an Ebola scare, and there's an episode, I believe season 2, called F. Emasculata that is very specifically about, it's not Ebola, but it's an Ebola-like thing, and they talk about Ebola in it. It was in the 90s, there was an Ebola scare, and so the X-Files sort of references it.
That's right. And wasn't that the same time Outbreak came out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a whole time where... It's interesting how every few years that happens. Like, we had Contagion, and then we had the real-life Ebola scare. So every, like, few... Planet of the Apes, isn't that also... No, there's no virus. Isn't there a virus in Planet of the Apes?
The new one, right?
Is the new one?
I think there is.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
I don't remember. I think whenever there's monkeys, there's a virus involved. Although I know the apes are not monkeys. They're fucking monkeys, right?
Fair enough.
Don't be asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Whales are fish. Apes are monkeys.
Yeah.
Let's just be... Spiders are bugs.
Frankenstein is the monster.
Yes.
Come on. Like, we all know what we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Tomato is not a fucking fruit.
No, I know. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. I like when she says her name is Bambi. She says it twice the exact same way. Her name is Bambi. And this is the first time that you, well, I guess not the first time, but they're really sort of hit kind of hard that she's a little jealous of it.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
This is one of the first times that there's some sort of hint at some sort of romantic interest between the leads.
They keep teasing the possibility of bringing these guys back. Is that going to happen again? Another X-Files?
I think so.
Yeah. You say it like... I believe in love.
I want to believe. I believe God's hand can be felt. Yeah. That's what he says in the last episode. I think what would be great would be like a 6-episode Netflix series.
Oh, yeah.
Because making a movie, it has to make like $200 million. That's crazy.
Yeah, and these aren't really meant to be movies.
They're not meant to be movies, I don't think. I think you're right. I think you do like a 6-episode arc that's like perfect. A new specific thing that's not about aliens or whatever. It could be about... a werewolf or something, one sort of arc, do it, put it on Netflix. The bar is still low on Netflix. You don't have to like get advertisers or like the same kind of ratings.
People like they're can... doing with Twin Peaks.
Right.
What is she doing now? I haven't seen
her. She's in a lot of stuff. She has this British show called The Fall,
which is really good. Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Really good. I think season two just started, but it's not on Netflix here yet. She's also in Hannibal, which is Mads Mikkelsen from Casino Royale.
That's right. Yeah.
He cries blood.
Yeah.
By the way, as far as tells go, that's the worst.
That is the textbook tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh
my God.
Tough to ignore.
Yeah.
Tough to ignore. The conversation where Mulder sort of goes on and tells her the whole thing of his backstory with Bugs, and he's like, it wasn't like a girly scream. And then after the whole thing, she goes, are you sure it wasn't a girly scream?
Yeah.
I thought that was a fun little conversation. That they were like great. Fun.
Yeah, the best thing about the show is when the two of them banter. And,
yeah, they're great at it. Yeah. You could clearly see that they really like each other.
Is there one writer, is it Chris Carter? Like, who's the best at getting their repertoire down? And
I think Darren Morgan's really good at it because he really gets at the differences between them.
Uh-huh.
And but he kind of like breaks down the relationship, which I think is interesting and not shows that it's not super healthy. His brother, Glenn Morgan, and James Wong, who's his writing partner, they're really good at Scully episodes and showing how Mulder's paranoia can like is bad.
That's fascinating that someone's like, we need a Scully episode. You're our Scully guy.
They're
you're
Scully people. Guy. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Howard Gordon, who's the creator of Homeland. He is, he's a good Mulder guy. And so there's like different, this is the first show I remember where different writers had different, like I noticed that they approached it all differently.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. I like the idea of, she says he's hung like a club-tailed dragonfly. They're talking about cockroach dicks?
Yeah.
And then later, they're like, is it? And he's like, yes, even the genitalia is normal. These two talk a lot about like penises and vaginas with each other.
Yeah, get a lab.
Yeah, get a lab. Get a lab. Why are they drinking when him and the doctor, the robot guy, the Stephen Hawking guy, he says, he makes fun of Mulder. He says, whoever believes in aliens is brainwashed by too much science fiction or that kind of gray, big-eyed alien. And Mulder's reaction is really funny. But then it cuts back and they're both like drinking. Do you remember that?
Now that you mention it, yeah. But
that was a weird little thing.
They never showed
why. Just like a weird, funny gag. They're just like splitting whiskey.
His little ground robot that he made. Yeah. I love that it has legs, but there's clearly wheels that it's rolling on, and the legs are purely for effect.
It's a really shitty... Emily has a Hammacher Schlemmer Christmas catalog. Do you know Hammacher Schlemmer?
Yeah.
They have a $4,000 robot in there that like does stuff for you.
Is it like, what does it do?
Well, it's...
Because I'm interested.
You're in the market for a robot? How much it costs, it doesn't do very much. You can kind of control it with a remote.
Yeah.
And you can talk into it and it talks. So basically, you can freak people out.
It's just an extension of yourself?
It's just an extension of yourself. I've already got one of myself. I don't need more. I like the part where Scully has like a great logical theory, which is like manure, and that's how the cockroaches came in. And Mulder, each time is a different thing, and now it's alien robots. Like each time he's like escalates. I thought that was fun. And I thought it was fun was when Scully pulls up and sees the doctor, and she goes, "Let me guess, Bambi," and she goes, "Yes, Fox is in there," and she just repeats like Fox, because nobody calls him Fox, but she does, and Scully's like kind of rolling her eyes.
I love that little scene when she pulls up.
Yeah,
yeah, because Bambi also, you can't hate her,
no,
because she's not hateable, but she's just innocent and.
Just innocent Scully and very, very attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Canadian hot.
90s Canadian
hot. 90s Canadian hot. I looked her up. She still looks great. She looks great.
I'll bet.
Is there anything else you want to say? I said that like we're always looking for some kind of connection, structure, reason. Sometimes random shit happens and we try and put structure on it. Like maybe that's what it is.
I think that's the best bet. It's not entirely clear, but...
Yeah, it's not...
That and the ending thing about how... It has to be that we're looking for purpose, but the purpose may not exist. That
right.
We really, at the end of the day, do those four things. And as much as we we've been cursed with wanting a purpose, but a purpose probably doesn't exist, and that's crazy.
We
to
make
think
our
about
own
that.
Purpose, and we do yeah. X Files podcasts.
But then now we have a purpose.
Yeah, now and we have a purpose. Just because we made it doesn't mean it's.
We laugh at God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Nobody's listening. We really pulled these two episodes together. Yeah, pretty we did.
Well done.
Is there anything else you want to say about these episodes?
No, other than thank you for having me.
Oh, this dude, was thanks so much for
fun
coming.
Fun to revisit and fun to talk about.
Yeah, did you like watching them again?
Yeah, I had a very pleasant experience. And if I ever have the excuse to just, as an assignment, sit down and watch TV, it takes the guilt out of not getting some other thing done.
Oh, yeah.
And I truly enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
The other day, I did the drunk history this season.
Did you get drunk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so to recover, I did the first season and I had to fly the next morning. And it was the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. And this time I knew, of course, I'm going to block out the full day. And it was last Tuesday and it was pouring rain.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
And I just put on the 60s Batman TV. And all day long, I got the cat. I got Amanda or whatever and the Christmas tree. And it just sitting there feeling like I knew I had this day blocked out to
it's
just
so
watch
great.
A full series of a television.
Yeah. Magical.
It's heaven.
Did you like watching it?
Batman?
Yeah.
I watched it as a kid and I didn't know it was camp and I loved it.
Right.
I took it sincerely. And then later on I realized it was camp and I enjoyed it. But now I really appreciate how brilliant they are comedically in that show. It's
really
incredible.
Interesting because it is a product of its time, but also aware of itself.
And way ahead of its time comedically, yeah. I think. And even the writing, like some of the plots are so wonderfully complicated. Like one of the ones I watched was Egghead. His whole plan
Vincent
is
Price.
Yeah, put a 10-cent tax on every egg sold in Gotham City or I'll kill Commissioner Gordon and give me that tax.
Wow.
Rob a bank.
Wow.
Or just say, give me $1 million.
Yeah.
But the,
why does it have to be egg? It has to be egg-based.
It does. And every pun he has is egg-based. And there's one where the...
Does he say excellent? Many.
Oh, yes, yeah. That's all he says. There's one where the Joker robs a bar by taking over like vending machines. And this one, he takes over a jukebox and the jukebox open up and a shotgun is on like the record needle.
I've seen
and
that.
It's just, yeah, like pendulating back and forth as if that's supposed to, no one can get away from that.
Oh,
like,
no. Yeah. Yeah, just duck.
And then thugs come into the room after that to take the money, but they don't have
the
guns.
Shotgun.
Yeah. When it's so brilliant.
When did you install the shotgun? I mean, so many questions.
It's the best.
It's great.
I love it.
All right, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
Promote your stuff. Wolf Pop?
Yeah, the whole Wolf Pop podcast network is up and running now, and it has a lot of great, really great shows on there. In fact, Devin Faraci's is one of my favorite on that show with
canon.
Amy Nicholson,
yeah.
And they discuss whether a movie should be in the canon of great films, and
yeah.
I love that show.
I should listen to it.
It's really worth listening
and
to.
And yours, you have one
called? Yeah, it's called I Was There Too, and I just interview people that aren't the stars of films but were present in really good scenes of cinema history, and they can tell you like what it was like on the day. And
yeah,
so.
Like the woman pushing the baby stroller.
In The Untouchables, yeah. She's my next guest. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And guy from Aliens. And then some people you know, like Paul F. Tompkins was in There Will Be Blood. And
I've heard his story about Daniel Day-Lewis talking over his lines and cutting him off more and more so that his line gets cut. That's really funny.
And there's a funny story Paul tells, I won't spoil it, but about in between takes, Daniel Day-Lewis sort of does this vocal noise exercise, or you don't know exactly what it is, but it's pretty fascinating.
He seems like he's really going for it. I mean, he's a force of nature.
He's looking for the whale.
Yeah. great. Well, thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure.
All right. Hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Next week, we're getting into two pretty heavy mythology episodes, Piper Maru and Apocrypha. These introduce new X-Files stuff, the mythology stuff that really, really comes to sort of define the X-Files mythology in the years to come. Again, at X-Files Files, again, feeling crazy, talking to nobody in particular. At X-Files Files, at Kumail N, subreddit is /X-Files Files. The email, which I always forget, I always forget what the email is. Here, I'll tell you what it is. It is, thexfilesfiles@gmail.com. xfilesfollows@gmail.com. I promise I will never ever forget it again. It's always, now it's seared in my memory. All right, see you guys next week. I won't see you, but you get it.
Oh, hey there. Hi. Do you like being happy and not sad? You should check out the podcast Hello and Good News. Each week, I sit down with a comedic guest and tell them all about the people, places, and current events affecting the world in a positive way. Whoa. So check out and subscribe to Hello and Good News on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app.
Yeah.